This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
You have a criminal enterprise as the federal government right now, period. It is committing crimes every single day. What is the reaction to that? A normal, moderate reaction would be, we should have law and order.
Amid all the darkness sweeping our nation over the past year, there remain vital signs of life from progressives. But will they be able to adequately fight, organize, and inspire to retake power? This week on Sea Change Radio, a political discussion with John Storr of the editorial board as we focus on the Democratic Party. We talk about messaging, the end of the government shutdown, and look at some of the rising stars on the left side of the aisle. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by John Storr. He is the founder and editor of the editorial board. John, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Good to be back, Alex.
Haven't talked to you in too long, my friend. I would love to get deep into politics with you, but I also don't want to because these days things are very, very dark and we try to steer away from talking about the president and too many things presidential. But let's focus on the Democrats, because that's a safe space, at least in my brain right now. You wrote a piece saying recently that Democrats have a chance to win back power, but will they use it? What is their chance to win back power, and how do you see it unfolding?
Well, in that piece, I tried to make a distinction between winning and using power. Most people are focused on winning and what they need to do to win. But the question really is, well, what do you do after you win? And what are you going to do with the power you have? And so, this is a slightly premature discussion because nobody's won anything yet, and the midterms aren't until next year. But I think it's one worth having because you need to signal to leaders what the expectations are. Frankly, the Democrats have a mixed history. There are many people who I think understand that what they need to do is fight, and that liberalism is a fighting faith, and it is a fight for liberty, individual liberty, and justice for all. But there are other Democrats who, are less morally centered, and they're more interested in their immediate self-interests and the interests of their constituents with the deepest pockets. So I think it's important to say to them, look, here are the expectations that we have once you win power. And also, all things being equal, it looks like the Democrats are going to take the House, even with all the Republican cheating, by which I mean the gerrymandering. So even with all that cheating, it looks like they're going to win. So it's important to say right now, here's what we expect you to do. And for me, first and foremost is accountability. There has to be accountability. And only with accountability can the Democrats demonstrate that the American people can trust them. And they have to use the power they have. If they don't use it, it looks weak. And weakness, as I have said before, that welcomes contempt. And that's the last thing the Democrats need is more people holding them in contempt.
So moderate Democrats like Hakeem Jeffries, Chuck Schumer, Dick Durbin, how do Democratic politicians rekindle the imagination, recapture the spirit and enthusiasm within that big block of moderate Democratic voters?
I don't know how exactly, but I think it begins with language and how they use language. I mean, a lot of this stuff centers on the idea of left, right, and center, or moderate. And the thing about moderate or centrist Democrats is that it's a kind of a phony middle. And everybody knows it's phony. Even they know it's phony, but they're playing along, and because playing along gives the impression of some kind of moderate position. And here's what I mean specifically. Take an issue like immigration. The Republicans lie constantly about immigrants, about immigration law, about what the Democrats do, what Joe Biden did in enforcing immigration law. Like everything they say is a lie. There's really nothing truthful in it. So to be a moderate Democrat, you know, what you end up doing is you accept a certain degree of these lies as true. You just kind of pretend that they're true. You know, and you make a little room on the left for, you know, a pathway to citizenship and such. But otherwise, you accept as true all these lies in order to give the appearance of moderation by comparison. And by comparison, I mean to your left, you know, those people who are saying, no, immigrants, there's nobody, you know, the left usually says things like, you know, no human is illegal, everybody should have a chance to be a citizen, things that are actually morally centered and really unimpeachable statements. But moderates pretend that they're radical or they're extreme and so on in order to seem like the middle.
When you're referring to moderates, are you referring to moderate voters or moderate politicians?
Oh, sorry, Democratic politicians, yes. And those who, you know, think of normal people who think of themselves as moderate. If you're somebody who thinks of yourself as moderate, there is actually a moderate position on things. You just have to be honest about it. You know, don't accept lies as true. You should start with what is true and then find some kind of moderate position within what is true. See what I mean? But don't accept lies. Just don't do that. And also you should lead with your values, like what do you believe is right? What do you believe is wrong? You know, and so on. And we can all find some kind of moderate position on things. I don't really believe there's other than outright communists who, you know, think the Chinese government is great. You know, there aren't that many actually extreme leftists around. It's just people who want to insist on the truth. And so begin there. You know, begin with language that reflects the truth. And then policy should be downstream from that.
Before Trump, there was an element of truth to what I'm about to say, is that there was these moderate Democrats. They viewed themselves often as pragmatists and realists. And progressives would say they're also cynics, and that's the greatest weakness within a party is cynicism, because without, you know, you lose hope when you're too cynical. But now that you have these bad actors in power, there is no middle ground to find common good and to be pragmatic or practical or realistic. You have to fight fire with fire, I think, is what like a Gavin Newsom and Mamdani and AOC are leading the charge on in terms of the language.
Yeah, you have a criminal enterprise as the federal government right now, period. It is committing crimes every single day. What is the reaction to that? A normal, moderate reaction would be, we should have law and order. We should have law and order, right? That should be the approach. And there's really, that is not a left, right, middle, extreme, anything. It's just like a very normal, we should have a restoration of law and order and justice and equality and equal treatment under the law. That's what we should have. If that's extreme, then the founding fathers were extreme, okay? That's the way it is. And I think every Democrat really ought to begin from that position. You can ask me more about what I think about the law and order thing, but I think that really all, like again with the language and values, policy is downstream from language and values.
Somebody told me once before, he said that you can never go home again. Once you leave, you'd take anything just to steer me away from the truth of who I am and what I believe. So I thank them for his 2 cents, with a shake and some sympathy. And I packed up my blue jeans and I headed for the big pie. Earned my freedom. So bye, bye, bye. Black sheep of the family. Bye, bye, black sheep. How that means so much to me.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to John Storr of the editorial board. So, John, we're talking about the language that Democrats have been using and should be using moving forward to take back power. When you talk about the current administration being a criminal enterprise. If we look at other totalitarian regimes, from the Nazis to the Philippines, Stalin, there's always been a thread of rebellion within those countries. People weren't just all in lockstep with Hitler and Stalin, but they were able to just suffocate any kind of dissent. How do Democrats find oxygen in this environment beyond just winning the midterms? Even if they do win the midterms, how do they still get to suffuse some breath and life back into this republic?
I'm not the first person to say this, but they have to force the Republicans to behave. You can't have a democracy with a two-party system when one of the parties goes rogue. That's really what it boils down to. I mean, we talk about, you know, Trump and the Republicans and the danger they are to the republic. But the fact is, if when one of the parties goes rogue, you can't have a democracy, a liberal democracy, I should say.
Yeah, the Constitution's really not built, as we've seen, to withstand these kind of rogue actors. The Founding Fathers didn't really even foresee something like this.
Yeah.
Or maybe they did, but it seems like there's a lot of loopholes to take advantage of if you are craven enough.
Yeah, and they are craven enough. I mean, they have built-in advantages like the Electoral College. They have built-in advantages like the Supreme Court. And so they see these opportunities to gather more and more power, and they're taking them. It's really pretty simple, right? So, but what has constrained them has been the opposition. And really, somebody smarter than me said, you know, something to the effect of, like, Trump is really not that strong. It's just his adversaries are weak. And that's true. I mean, the adversaries have been weak. It is the kind of adversaries that accept lies as true in order to seem like a middle position. And you have to stop accepting the lies in order to be a truly adversarial force. And with that force, it's like a parent talking to a child. You are going to apply discipline. You're going to force these people to behave. And once they realize they have to behave, then we can have democracy again. You know, really, it's just like that. And so I do see the Democrats shedding their norms and institutions instinct and realizing that they themselves have to be the consequences. They can't punt to public opinion anymore. They can't punt to the courts. They can't punt to other institutions in hopes that they will force the Republicans to behave. No, the Democrats have to force the Republicans to behave.
When we talk about the recent shutdown, the government shutdown, and the way the Democratic Party basically surrendered, there was a lot of finger pointing to go around, and it was not coincidental that the 8 Democratic senators who voted to restart the government, none of those 8 are going to be on the ballot in 2026. So Schumer and the Senate leadership they're hoping that Democrats won't have purity tests with that. I'm on the fence a lot about the purity test thing. I was just at a town hall for a Democratic congressman, Shoykat Chakrabarty, who's running for Nancy Pelosi's seat, and just listening to the questions that were being asked. They were like, how did you vote on the school board recall 2 years ago? Like, who did you vote for mayor? Like, these are purity tests in some ways. So how do Democrats avoid getting caught up in purity tests, but still hold their leaders to account?
The thing about the shutdown is that it was orchestrated by Chuck Schumer. So let's just make that's a fact. It was orchestrated by Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer voted against reopening the government, but he worked with those 8 other Democrats and they provided cover for him, period. Now, why did they do that? I think it's because they realized that things were going to get much, much worse because Trump was not going to ever move, no matter what.
And he didn't care. He didn't care who he hurt, and he didn't. And when the SNAP money was getting pulled, it was like the people who are going to suffer are the most vulnerable.
Yes, the things were going to get much, much worse. And so what they should have said is, look, we're going to pull back because things are getting much, much worse. These are terrible people. Well, you should vote for us next time. That's what they should have said, right? But the message was all weird. And these are Angus King is terrible at communicating. Maybe he's good for Maine, I don't know. But for me, I was just like, really? Your excuse is that fighting Trump didn't work, and so you can just stop fighting? That was the worst thing he could have said to a Democratic base that wants to fight. So why he was out front, there was a lot of just weird messaging things going on. If they were just honest, again, going to the truth and saying, look, these are monsters. We tried to beat the monsters, but there continue to be monsters, and so we don't have any more leverage. We're going to pull back and try to spare some suffering. That's where they should have said, you know. And anyway, that again is, and sometimes you don't win fights. Sometimes you say, we tried to win this battle, and we don't think we can win this. We're going to aim for a battle down the road. They could have said that too, right? And frankly, somebody like me who has been very critical since the party stabbed Joe Biden in the back. I've been very critical of the Schumer and Pelosi wing. I would have accepted that. I would have said, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, and we'll just fight another day. But they didn't do that.
And instead, those 8 Democrats who voted to reopen the government were shamed, basically, in public for a week or two. And even the great John Storr wrote a piece entitled, "The Democrats Continue to Tolerate Backstabbers." So these are the backstabbers. But I think they were pretty much taking one for the team as well.
Yeah, but they were also shivving us.
Shivving us, but like, what if you were counting on your food stamps for the holidays, like, or a government employee who hadn't been paid in a month on furlough? Like, you could understand why you may not view those people as backstabbers.
So what the fact is the Trump was going to continue to starve people, right? Even after the Democrats surrendered, and the Democrats should have said, we are going to not participate in the starvation of other people. That's what they should have said. We know that this administration is going to continue to try to starve people, and you can expect that to happen, but we are not going to participate in that. That would have been a pretty good position to take, I think.
Yeah, but we're talking about the messaging versus the votes. Like, those 8 senators who made that vote, some of them, like Fetterman, have really become unmoored, I think. But like a Jackie Rosen or Tim Kaine, I don't think they're necessarily feeling good about what they had to do. I think Schumer kind of strong-armed them into falling in line. That's my guess.
Yeah, a lot of it's still like inexplicable. You know, I mean, we are talking about plausible rationales for their behavior, but that's really all it is plausible rationales. I don't know, and that honestly bothers me a lot that I don't know. And if I don't know, I don't have a lot of faith. And if I don't have faith, I the next fight that comes along, I'm like, is Schumer going to follow through with what he says? And I don't know. I don't know if he will. I don't necessarily trust him, because he doesn't speak. Going back to the language, language has been so corrupted in Washington. You know, like, things up is down, left is right, backwards is forwards, and if you continue to think of yourself and your reputation as a moderate, you will accept some of this corruption as real or as necessary or as the way of doing business. And then when you talk to people who don't have that concept in their minds, like they went, like left is left and right is right, you seem like a dishonest broker, right? And that is where they need to clean house. Like that, just speak plain. Turn to people like AOC. Somebody, this is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York City, New York congresswoman. She has been a normal person in her life, meaning she had bills, was a student, had a job, and she knows what life is like for most people. And she knows people are struggling. She knows the feeling of struggling. I will add one more point. She knows how much $10 is worth, right? $10. She knows what $10 can buy. Does Schumer know what $10 can buy? I don't know. Does Trump? Absolutely not. He has no idea what $10 can buy. That's how far away. These people may as well be living on Mars. So you need to speak to people where they are in life in order to inspire trust. And if you don't do that, no trust.
I was born by the river. Oh, I just like the river I've been running. Yeah.
ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change has gotta come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living. Oh, but I'm afraid to die. 'Cause I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change is gonna come.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to John Storr of the editorial board. So, John, we're talking about language and Democrats using it more effectively. Let's look at some of the rising stars of the party. You mentioned AOC. Mamdani had a big win in New York City. I mentioned Shoykat Chakrabarty, who seems like he used to be AOC's chief of staff. He's a very wealthy. He was an engineer for Stripe and made a lot of money and went into progressive politics. He's an interesting character, and I think we'll have him on Sea Change Radio soon. One of his more refreshing takes on his wealth is that he says he just hit the lottery. He got lucky. And I think that's one thing that we don't see from a lot of these wealthier politicians. Wealthy people in general, they have to say, you know, they worked really hard for what they had, and so they deserve it. Shoykat said, yes, I worked hard, but no harder than any teacher or fireman or anything like that. There should be no shame in admitting that. But some of the better communicators, Chris Murphy, he's your senator in Connecticut. He's really changed quite a bit. Why don't you talk about his evolution and what that could spell for the future of not only the Democratic Party, but more specifically in the Senate, where it's a little more stodgy.
Chris Murphy is getting a lot of attention because I think he has shed a lot of the linguistic trappings of moderation. Let's put it that way. You know, that he now sees that if you continue to accept lies as true in order to take a phony make believe middle position, that's gonna hurt you, especially in light of the fact that the federal government is a criminal enterprise. You cannot have a phony middle position in opposition to that. You have to take the position of truth, evidence, fact, justice, et cetera, right? And he's really taking that. He's not as, here in Connecticut, he's considered like just your regular guy, you know? And every year, by the way, he walks across the state of Connecticut, which is a small state, so it's not that big a deal, but he still walks across the whole thing, and he talks to people, and
that's a pretty big walk.
Yeah, he walks across the whole thing and back again, and to his home. I think his home city is Hartford, you know, he talks to everybody, right? No matter who they are. And if you don't know, most people don't know Connecticut, but if you live in the cities, you're probably a Democrat. If you live in the suburbs, you're probably a Republican. So he crosses everywhere and talks to everybody. And he's very good. He's very good personally. Like, he's just one of those people who has the juice, you know. Some people, you know, don't have that juice. But he has evolved to be more of a constitutional warrior, right? He basically is like, I'm not an extreme. It is actually, in fact, a liberal position to take when you say I stand by the Constitution. But he's saying, no, it's not liberal or conservative. It's constitutional, and I stand for freedom of speech and all those kinds of things. And that's not a hard thing to emulate, I think. Everybody can do that. Everybody should do that, because those values are everybody's values, and they protect everybody.
I think having this dark cloud over the current American political system will activate the juice in a lot more politicians like Chris Murphy, who may not have found their inspiration previously. But when you're in the face of oppression, people are starved to hear that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems brave, courageous. I mean, you know, when it comes to corruption and accepting lies and stuff, there's a kind of cowardice built into that. And I think people understand that subconsciously, that there's a kind of cowardice. And you can't trust cowardice, right? You can't, because you don't know where people are going to, if they're going to bend with the wind, where do they stand on things that really matter to you? I would think somebody like Mark Kelly, the senator from Arizona, has really, suddenly he seems like a man's man. To me, he is the kind of people since the election.
Genuine, too.
Genuine, but that's what I mean by man's man. It's not a fake man's man, right? Like this guy.
Graham Plattner, are you thinking of? And you're talking about fake. He's running for a Senate in Maine, and he comes from a wealthy family, but he's positioned himself as just this everyday blue-collar oyster farmer, and it seems disingenuous to me.
It is. It is. Basically, I mean, he's adopted a working-class lifestyle for himself. That's the most charitable way I would put it. But he's pretending like that gives him some authority that other people don't have. That's the problem, right? Mark Kelly, he's saying who he is. He's like, I was a Navy pilot. I'm a war hero, which he was. I was an astronaut. My wife was nearly assassinated. These are all facts, right?
And they're all like more than what 99% of us have dealt with in our lives.
Right. That's right. Have you been an astronaut, Alex?
Not lately. It's quite a story.
And he presenting himself as the face of a rigorous, almost fierce opposition, right? And I think that's really where the Democratic Party needs to put its energy. I would say Mamdani has the same juice, by the way. Look at those pictures from him in the White House with Trump and the way Trump looked at him. That was an amazing display of dominance on Mamdani's part. He dominated that guy.
It was weird, that whole press conference. The obsequiousness that Trump was expressing was bizarre, but also Mamdani was kind of playing nice, you know? He was saying all the right things, but yeah, his general charisma won that moment.
Basically, Mamdani just said, I take a values-based position and I'm very laser-focused on that. There is nothing you can do to intimidate me or push me off of this position. And Trump accepted it. He's just like, okay, I can't do anything. And all I can do is try to charm you and smile you, and that didn't work either. And now, probably weeks later, he's going to start hating Mamdani even more because of that fact. But Mamdani is a man, as far as I can tell, I don't know that much about him, but he presents himself and seems to be a genuine man of principle, right? Like, he wants to do good for as many people as possible. That's a man standing on principle, and Trump didn't know what to do with that. He crumpled, as far as I could see. It was an amazing display, and I would like to see more of that.
Well, I would like to continue our discussion, but we're out of time. Always appreciate you coming on the show. John Storr of the Editorial Board. People can go to editorialboard.com and subscribe to your wonderful site there. John Storr, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Herbie Hancock and Martin Sexton. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.